What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pomp and Joe. We talked about making the show Joe and Pomp, but Bob, I'm simply not important enough.
To be honest, it is the Joe Show. It still remains that. They just changed the name, and I don't know why. They didn't have to, but...
No, I like it this way. You're clearly the celebrity here, but we have another one in our midst. That is Chris Curd, former Pitt receiver, Pitt defensive back, and he has a lot to do with flag football in this area. Let me make sure I get your titles right here, Chris. Commissioner of the Pittsburgh Flag Football League, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Flag Football Association, and somebody who travels the world quite literally, selling, promoting, teaching flag football. Was just in Ghana, for goodness sakes. But we're going to start with this, Chris. First, a welcome to you and your daughter, Sydney. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thanks for having us in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, this is a treat because this is a huge story.
And we should set the stage about Chris at Pitt. And
what
go ahead. Because I think people who don't know, younger people may not realize just how good he was when he was at Pitt.
This dude was telling us stories, was in a receiver room with Antonio Bryant and later, or maybe at the same time, I don't remember, Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Larry came right after. So right after Tone left out, Larry came in. And so this was, when I tell you, quite frankly, in terms of adversity and having to deal with being in a receiver room, I mean, with the way that college football is structured now with the transfer portal, I'm not going to lie, 20-year-old me, 21-year-old me would have hit the door. And
especially with those guys.
Exactly. I mean, it was very, very challenging because every single day you come into work, you come into the office, and it's like, man, this guy is that much better than me. And you learn, you push each other. But then I wound up having to go on this journey across Pitt football. So I went from wide receiver over, I had a 2-day stint at linebacker, which made no sense. Okay. And then I went from linebacker, put on 30 pounds, played tight end for a little bit and still getting manhandled. And then come back full circle. I said, okay, Coach Rhodes was on me the entire time. And Coach Rhodes would say, Chris, come to the dark side. Come to the dark side. I'm like, Coach, I don't really.
Meaning defense?
Yeah, come to defense. Yeah. So I went to defense at free safety. And, you know, I didn't really play that much at free safety. But quite frankly, the environment was great. Coach Rhodes was amazing. And being with the guys like Shante Spencer, Tez Morris, Ty Gilliard, guys like this in the room, it was fantastic. And then going back into my last year, I go back to Brookhart, and I'm like, hey, it was a wide receiver coach, offense coordinator. I said, I want to come back. Receiver room. And he blatantly told me, he said, you will be at the bottom of the depth chart. And I said, I don't care. I said, I'm better than everybody you have over here. And you need somebody with Larry. And I just worked. And going in, you know, I got that, you know, most improved player award that year at the spring ball. And it came into the season, battling back and forth. And then by the Texas A&M game, it was Larry and I starting. And ironically, I got hurt. And I tore my leg all up. And football, for the most part, I thought was over, to be honest. I mean, most guys, when you get a serious knee injury like that, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And yeah, fortunate enough, I got an opportunity with the Falcons, you know, like a lot of guys.
And played in preseason games.
Played preseason games. Got an opportunity to play against Ray Lewis, which was impressive to say the least.
Run into him?
No, thank God. the time when I was going in, he was already out of the game. You know, this is one of those games where they do like the first series and then, you know, everybody else trying to survive is on the
Bob asked Chris who he thinks was the more naturally gifted receiver.
Yes, you were in a room with Antonio Bryant and Larry Fitzgerald.
Yes.
And we know about Larry. Saw him in the Super Bowl when he played for Arizona, what he did, Hall of Famer.
Yep.
But who was better?
In my honest God opinion, and this is only having worked with both of them, Larry was phenomenal. Phenomenal with ball skills, ball placement, the whole nine yards. The guy, in terms of his adjustment of someone with a 6'3", 220-pound frame, no one better than business. But in terms of actual route running, ball catching, yards after the catch, separation, Antonio had it. I'm being flat out honest. And he was gifted. I mean, he and I were in the same class with Lamar Slade. And the coaching staff pulled us in. We were all freshmen. This is back when Pitt used to do camp up at Johnstown.
Yeah.
Brookhart pulled us in the room. He said, look, I want to redshirt everybody. He's like, but we have no choice. Two of you guys are going to play. And so we're all sitting there like, all right, it's going to be everybody. Three of us in the room. We're like, it's going to be me. I'm going to be the guy. And we were competing first 2-3 days. And then day 4 comes around and goes, okay, everybody hand in your playbooks. We're going to do the second install. My face drops. I'm like, this is a 3-ring binder, probably 1.5, 2 inches thick of plays. And I'm like, I'm And I'm being honest, we ran a very complicated West Coast style offense back then. And me coming from a small town in Youngstown, Ohio, small school, Erskine High School, we had 6-7 plays. The rest of it we made up as we went along.
I mean, you look at Antonio Bryant's college stats as a junior or second year play, sophomore, I guess. 10 games, 68 catches, 1,300 yards, 19 yards a catch, and 11 touchdowns.
Yes.
Which is why he was an All-American.
He was good. Tom was real good. He was really, really good. And he's still a good friend of mine. He actually lives down in Texas. He does a lot of great work down there. Business owner. Good guy. Seriously. And Larry, I actually bumped into Larry back during the season when they had the celebration for the Hall of Fame. And he's doing well, obviously, now, too. So, I mean, both incredible receivers. I'll say this. I'm glad I played college football when I played college football.
Yeah.
Because of what it's become now, the cat's out of the bag, and I don't even know how you get hands around it anymore, really. It's going to be a real challenge unless the conferences really start to take a hold of each of the teams and going, hey, we're going to do our own sort of governance. Because the thing that people don't talk about that needs to be talked about is the lack of transparency. The lack of transparency when kids are actually looking to want to transfer and go somewhere. It's not like the NFL waiver wire where you can say, oh, well, let me see what the Seahawks are doing. Mm-hmm. Let me see who's on active roster, inactive roster. You don't know. It's all mysticism. Mm-hmm. And so even if you have a parent that played Division I sports and goes, hey, let's be educated about this before we just jump in the portal, there's no transparency. And that's going to be a real challenge going forward in terms of making good educated decisions on where and if a kid should go into the portal.
Well, you're in the middle of a big football story yourself.
Yes.
And NFL owners voted the other day, Bob, 32.
Unanimously.
32 to nothing.
I was surprised by that. 24, I think they needed, right, to get that vote.
Yeah.
And I knew there'd be some pushback a little. I thought there would be because there is still the prospect of injury if these guys go over there and play. But they said, no, they're 100% behind it, which makes your job even more important than it has been.
Yeah. Chris. I mean, here's the funny thing. You know, we started Pittsburgh Flag Football League back in 2009. And I can tell you all the athletic directors, gym teachers, principals that looked at, you know, myself, and hats off to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Marchinsky, Joe Lofton, Kevin Ackerman, all these guys that have helped kind of really grow the game at the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
But it started even long before then, just getting kids in rec leagues. No one really took it seriously. And now it's at a point where it has reached and elevated a level where now, because you have some small colleges giving scholarships away, and then just the elevation of females in sports and their performance, it now is a different it's now a different avenue. The one thing I always tell parents when they're interested in having their daughters play is, you know, flag football is very similar to rugby in the sense that it's not full contact, but it's a come as you are sport. You know, if you have blazing speed, fantastic. If you're tall like my daughter Sydney, and you're 5'10", 5'11", that's great. But you don't have to be. Mm-hmm. You know, right now we're coaching the Big 33 team that's going to compete this weekend against Eastern PA, DC, and Maryland. We have a young lady on our team named Nirmala, a student over at Carrick, senior. She's 4'8".
She's that's awesome.
Same height as my 9-year-old. It's like my 9-year-old daughter. But it's a come-as-you-are sport, and so there's not a profile. It's not like, oh, I play volleyball, so if you don't have the height, you know, you can only go so far.
Having said that, when we get to the highest level in L.A. at the Olympics, it's seemingly clearer than ever that NFL players are going to be there. And my take was, having watched last year's World Championship, Austria against U.S., and the Austrian team looked like a bad YMCA pickup team. I'm like, what is Lamar and Jamar Chase going to do to these guys? You talked me off the ledge, Chris, on a couple of levels. One, other countries have a chance to ramp up. Two, every NFL team is going to put at least one guy in the portal, so to speak, here. So you could have guys representing other countries. And then three, that it's not just about the NFL making money worldwide, but it's about presenting the opportunity for kids around the planet, and you were just in Ghana, to play a sport that's very accessible, as you just mentioned, and also inexpensive. Like, this is a good thing for kids around the planet.
Absolutely. And this is the thing that, and the only reason why I would even have the perspective that I have is because of that trip I recently just came back from in Ghana.
Mm.
So one of the primary challenges that we saw when we're over there, and the individual I met with were from IFAF and from different federations of each of the 9 countries within supporting the continent of Africa. But one of the big challenges that were there, with the exception of South Africa and Nigeria, in a lot of the countries, you can't, it's not even about money. It's not about money. It's, do you have access to go buy a football? And so I said this to the representatives from NFL UK and NFL Africa. At the end of the day, we're cleaning up the drills and everything. We're on the field 4 or 5 hours. I said, what would happen if all 60 of these footballs just got stolen or you can't miss it? And he's like, we'd be in a world of trouble. I said, so there's no like a Dick's Sporting Goods. There's not like a local sporting shop. He's like, no. He said, and that's one of the biggest challenges. So when you talk about accessibility, it's not just about the field space. A lot of it is, do we even have the footballs and the flag belts and the equipment? So what makes the game of flag so accessible is that the reality is it's cheap. You know, as long as you have space and knowledgeable people teaching it, teaching the skill sets, it's going to grow. Now, as it relates to what the NFL is proposing now and is going to go forward with the IOC, the thing that we were talking about this yesterday, because when you reached out, I said, oh, hold on, let me give you some insight on this, because the reality is most people, this is sort of a niche sort of industry, I guess you could say, you know, flag football, adult level and kids level, but it is growing massively. Right now amongst girls, over the last 5 years, volleyball has been in a steady uptick, competitive volleyball, but flag has just gone through the roof. Here in Western Pennsylvania alone, we've outpaced girls lacrosse. And we did it in, you know, obviously with the Steelers, their support, the Rooney family, and the fine folks over there, we were able to outpace this in 4 years. Mm. So we've got Western PA alone, 50 high school girls teams. So what does this mean from a pipeline standpoint for the Olympics? Now, as it relates to the men's side and the NFL players getting involved, like we talked about yesterday, the thing that I think that people are not talking about is the international play of this. So just because the NFL owners agreed and said, hey, you know, we can all offer up one player to participate, that doesn't mean 32 guys are now going to run and play for the U.S. national team. You've got a lot of talented men and women that have played on the U.S. national teams for years already, competed international competitions, and done extremely well. Our women's team still needs work, but the men's team, I would argue, is pretty much there. And this isn't like one-time thing. This is over a span of 8 to 10 years, you know, every other year playing at the World Games. What this is going to really do is help add gasoline to the fire of the growth of flag football on a global basis.
Like the dream team basketball, exactly. You said.
Exactly. And so like the example that I've been using when I'm talking to people about this the last few days is, you know, when the dream team came out, everybody was aware, you know, I was 15, 16 years old. Everybody was aware we were going to go over there and handle business and just, you know, basically destroy everybody. But did the European audience really know? Well, as soon as they found out, what happened? We have the result of the NBA today, where it's not, you know, European born players are not the majority, but they are definitely some of the most popular,
yep.
A lot more of them. And so it allowed them to say, oh, you know what, we've got to pick our game up. Making this announcement now, I would argue that this is now going to give every country a little bit of lead time to kind of get caught up to speed, because many of the countries already have their national teams put together. It's just a matter of, do we have enough players? Do we have a big enough pool? Well, now if you can start pooling guys from NFL rosters that already have dual citizenship or whatever the citizenship requirements or heritage that ties back to a certain European or African country or country in Asia, this now gives an opportunity to go, you know what, let's get so-and-so from the Seahawks, from the Steelers, from the Browns, wherever, get them on our team. Now they become like an ambassador right now as a lead up to where it's going to start pulling even more talent out of these countries to get their teams ready. Now, will they perform? Will they do it at the highest level? We don't know. But to just say there's going to be a wholesale chopping of the current USA men's national team, I think that's a bit aggressive. I mean, the idea is there. You know, we want to promote the game any way, shape, or form. But the last thing I think the NFL or the IOC or the USA wants to do is risk losing. You know, you don't want to risk losing the game that we've invented in Los Angeles in the first time ever.
No.
And then it looked bad. You know, you don't want that. So it's going to be a unique opportunity, and I think, again, the real growth is going to be on the international scale. Those teams that we don't know about, you know, them getting elevated all of a sudden by household names of the NFL.
So for those who are still new to this and they want to know about it, like, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of guys who would like to play, but there's only a certain amount of guys who fit sort of the criteria to play, right?
Yeah.
In other words, there's no blocking.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
No.
Right, you can't be physical that way.
Nope.
What are some of the specific things that I think people would want to know about.
It's 5-on-5, right?
So it's 5-on-5, and the rule book that's going to be used is the IFAF. So IFAF stands for the International Federation of American Football. And if you go online, you can check them out. I think it's just IFAF.org. This is more or less an organization that has been established over the years to help each country start their own local federation. So here in the United States, we're all familiar with USA Football. Well, USA Football is also considered the federation, the global federation for America, for American football, which makes sense. But what if you're in the Congo? Or what if you're starting up and you're in Nigeria? What if you're starting up and you're in India or Pakistan? It's grassroots level. And so oftentimes what's being done is, how do we start with adult men, adult women, and then trickle down from there? So their pool is not nearly the size of players that our pool is. But some of the top skill sets you have to have, speed, number one. You have to have speed. The ability to outrun and be shifty is going to be key. Number two, catching. Even if you're playing on defense or if you're the rusher on the field, you want to have that ability to catch the ball because you just never know. Everybody's kind of almost have to be very position flexible. If I was going to relate this to tackle football, you want to have a team of wide receivers and DBs.
Right.
Really. That's where you're aiming.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It has to be speed first, ability to open field run.
Exactly.
Avoid people trying to get you.
Yes.
So all the things that you would want.
Right. And when I was watching this world championship last year, to paint a picture for people, it's a center snaps the ball to a quarterback, and the center runs out too. So you basically have a quarterback and four eligibles. Then you have one pass rusher, and the whole defense starts 7 yards behind the line. And the pass rusher's got to sprint in. And you were telling me, Chris, and we're talking to Chris Curd, by the way, former Pitt football player in the early 2000s, and he's the commissioner of the Pittsburgh Flag Football League, executive director of the Pennsylvania Flag Football Association, a worldwide ambassador for the game through the NFL. And this is big because now we're going to have NFL players, it certainly looks that way anyway, playing in the Olympics in L.A. So you were telling me that this one pass rusher who starts 7 yards behind the line, that the key here, since there's no blocking,
right,
the key is pure speed. So what about Noah Lyles? What about the fastest man in America?
I mean, you could do something like that. But then also, too, you don't want to necessarily – when you think about rushers with real skill, and this is adults all the way down to children, speed is the key ingredient. But then it gets to a point of where, okay, control. So it's almost like a baseball pitcher. Whenever I'm coaching kids about being a rusher, it's you have to have different options. So the majority of the time, you're just going all out. You're just trying to get to the quarterback as fast as possible.
Because the quarterback can't run even if he's rushed, correct?
Correct. They can scramble around behind the line of scrimmage.
Not allowed to take off.
They can't just take off and run.
But there's a big but there that I saw in this game.
There's a workaround. There's definitely
a workaround. You can have someone line up right behind the snapper, take a quick snap and relay it back to Lamar Jackson, who can then do anything he wants.
100%. And when you have a dual threat quarterback, that's basically, so like Bob, if you think about it like this. If Joe's at center, I'm basically like the fake quarterback. You're in shotgun about 7 or 8 yards back. Think of me as almost like a fullback or a sniffback. I stand to the side. I'm the one that says set, go. I just grab it from Joe through his legs and then pitch it back to you.
Yeah.
Because I've done that, I've now killed the pass clock. So you can take forever. Number two, I've given you the ability to just say, the heck with it, I'm going to run. And so that's the workaround that's always used. Now, there's all sorts of strategies.
When you say always used, how much is that used? I'm just...
A lot for teams when you have a legitimate dual threat quarterback. Because sometimes when you have a guy or a girl that's, you know, not the fastest, but has a fantastic arm and can make good decisions, it's better off to just let them sit in the pocket. Let them sit in the pocket and let them do what it is they're going to actually do. But as it relates to the NFL players and their potential participation in this, where I could see the big added value is going to be two things. One, the size difference. So, you know, we talked about, you know, take someone like Chase Claypool, Canadian resident, born and raised. Chase is probably a legitimate 6'4", potentially 6'5". It's going to be hard-pressed to say, you know, someone from Austria is going to have a DB that's even 6 feet, 6'1".
Right.
Like, that's going to make a matchup nightmare. So there's a benefit there that we as Americans, just because we're bigger. All right, that's one. Number two, where I would see the big push is likely going to be with defensive backs. Defensive backs on any football field, I don't care if it's flag, tackle, youth, high school, college, NFL, whatever, they are the most talented athletes typically on the field. And so if we as a country can say, We have the best cover people in the world. I would venture to guess that's the direction they're going to go, because from the receiver spot, yes, everything is the same. When you're running routes, catching the ball, tackle or flag, it's the exact same. Where things get different is as soon as you catch the ball. It's what you do after the catch. And that's where it becomes, I don't even want to say it's a dangerous proposition for NFL players, but in terms of, you probably saw guys were spinning.
Yeah.
They were dipping. So they were dipping down.
Guys were flying into the back of their legs.
And so it's one of these things where those body movements and patterns, can they be taught to an elite level athlete? Sure they can. But is your body used to it? Do you even want to risk it? If you already know, I've got a pool of quality receivers and centers that have been doing this internationally, know the game, know the stage, know the importance. Why risk it? You know, why just absolve it just so you can say, we've got this up-and-coming guy who just got 1,000 yards for whatever NFL team. So it's going to be interesting to see how it is. This, again, because it's one per team, NFL team that's allotted to do it, I see there being a big push on the international basis, because what that does is that now takes just the game of football in general and elevate it, and it elevates the NFL brand across the globe.
There's a lot of questions there, Bob. My dream could come true here, and Limits knows my dream. And I want to get Chris's feeling on this. I've dreamed in the NFL of a team somewhere running a two-quarterback system, and it would require the two quarterbacks to be able to be elite throwers, elite runners. And if they can do that, I'm guessing they can catch too. So imagine a regular NFL team with Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson in the backfield, where you don't know where the snap is going and where either guy could hand it off, run an option, run down the field, throw bombs, run up the middle, anything they want. Would this lend itself to that? And what if the NFL team, what if we did that, Bob, for the U.S. team? Daniels and Jackson in the same backfield.
As insane as that sounds, because you have the ability to lateral the ball. And remember now, this is a small field.
How small?
Well, that was my next question, because it couldn't be what it is now.
This is a quarter of an NFL field. So, like, look, if this piece of paper is like a traditional, you know, 100-yard American football field, it is 1/4.
But still 70 yards long,
I think it's
50 yards
long? I think
it's
50 or 60 yards long, goal line to goal line. I'm pretty sure it's 60 yards long, goal line to goal line.
And then thinner.
The width.
The sidelines. Yeah. And the idea, by the way, is to get, you get one first down and then touchdown.
Exactly.
So half the field is a first down and then a touchdown.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what you want to do.
And you still get four downs?
Yes. For IFAF, it's four. Okay. And then I think it's four for the first down, and then it's four after.
Okay.
NFL flag, what they would do for kids, it's three for the first down, and then three after a score.
Give me Daniels and Jackson in the same backfield.
Oh, I mean, come on. That'd be amazing. Are you kidding me? I mean, listen, what would be unreal about that is the lateral aspect.
Yes.
Because you could say, all right, both of them can throw the full length of the field. But what are you doing now if you got Lamar at quarterback, Jaden Daniels at receiver, he takes a step back, catches the lateral, Lamar goes out into the play, all the other receivers in play.
Bob.
Then Jaden just says, the heck with it, I'm running.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's away with you, and
yes,
he creates open 100%.
Lanes. Like, the talent is there.
Are you saying you want to see this in an NFL game?
I want to see someday an NFL team team have two quarterbacks, yes, on the field.
Now, how realistic do you think that is, Chris? Because this league takes a long time to adopt certain things.
Right.
That would be, plus, you'd have to have a huge amount of money available for both.
Well, eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
But you could take a rookie Jaden Daniels.
I could, but
let's say the Ravens had drafted him and you want to get creative. Could it work? You're the football player.
No, it could work. At the NFL level, I doubt it, purely because of what Bob was saying. Like, you know, it takes forever for people to adapt to things. At the collegiate level, where you've got Division I teams scraping and scrounging to find what is our differentiation piece other than we don't have any money. So it's like, how do we stay unique? How do we attract eyeballs, and how do we kind of gobble up a couple of wins and catch somebody slipping?
And you could prevent a kid from transferring.
100%.
Might want to transfer because he's not going to get a shot. Now he will get a shot.
Yeah, 100%. Because it sounds like a gimmick, but I mean, let's be real. Look, I'm 44 years old. I vividly remember the wing T offense. Mm-hmm. I vividly remember the triple option. Like, that's not that long ago. Now, if we saw something like that today, we go, oh, this is crazy. But let's look. Over the last year and a half of NFL, we've seen the rise and respect of the running back come back into play. And it's not even so much like, oh, the fullback and the tailback. No, it's just the running back. Let's respect these guys, respect their work, their values there. Saquon Barkley did his thing. But I've actually heard rumblings now of, I don't know if it was the the Ravens, there's some NFL team that has like made some public statements saying that their mission is to bring back the fullback, the value of the fullback, and bringing them, incorporating them back in, because it's a form of old school football, or smash mouth. But like in everything, you know, this kind of ebbs and flows in terms of popularity, like what works, what sells tickets, and what produces wins. So,
well, let's talk a little more about that. I want to save time here the rest of the hour. We're going to have a fantasy draft. Myself, Chris, Bob, and Little Limit sitting in there. Reach. Have you talked to Limits yet, Chris? No. He's an unbelievable guy.
Okay.
Yeah, right. An ambassador of the sport.
Little Limits.
A football genius. Okay. And,
I'm not
and
a small guy, no, Chris. You're not, I mean, weight-wise,
he weighs 140 pounds, Chris.
I tell you what, here's a good thing. I still got one more shirt left. I brought a medium.
Oh, no, so it's a toddler shirt. Yeah. Right.
It's a 4T.
Little Limits.
You can fit into that.
You sound like Pony used to call me Little Austin, but he doesn't do that anymore.
You know how little kids get to run around at PNC Park on Sundays? Limits still does that. He slides into home.
Sorry, Limits. Feet first. Got to practice your slides.
So here's what we're going to do, Chris. We're going to draft like a real draft.
Okay.
You're going to step to the podium. You'll make your pick, then Bob, then me, that type of thing.
So we get five picks.
So we're going to have five picks. And I want to ask you next, too, about whether you think NFL teams will allow their players to do this, because there's an obvious injury risk. I'm going to ask you that question next as well. Chris Curd, former Pitt wide receiver, defensive back, and a flag football ambassador and executive here in Pittsburgh, talking about NFL players playing flag football in L.A. in 2028.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.